Hello, everybody, this is Loki, Way of Loki, and welcome to the No Hit Podcast. Here it's my job to interview extraordinary gamers in the realms of challenge running, whether that be no hit runs, completing games in their entirety without taking a single hit or point of damage, speedrunning, completing games that would normally take hours and mere minutes, and other such ventures. Today's guest is McSwoozy. That's McSwoozy at Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. Swoozy is a master of the Dark Souls trilogy, having completed Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3. All bosses plus DLC bosses, no hit, as well as having completed each game no hit back to back in his trilogy no hit run. Swoozy is also a filmmaker, having created many amazing VFX short films on YouTube under the name Nukazooka. That's Nukazooka on YouTube and Twitter. These being gaming themed short IRL films with visual effects, with notable vids such as Mario v Minecraft, Fallout v Skyrim, and Super Mario Underworld, plus many, many others. In this conversation, we go through Swoozy's approach to learning these no-hit runs, the differences and difficulties between completing all bosses runs and the trilogy run, taking part in challenge running events, such as events put on by Team Widers and Team Hitless, both communities of challenge runners, as well as an insight in how Swoozy creates these VFX films and resources he'd recommend for people wanting to start out. I hope you enjoy this conversation with McSwoozy. Swoozy, appreciate you taking the time out for this. Welcome to the podcast. How's it going, dude?
Hey, how's it going, man? Good to see you. I'm happy to be here.
So we're going to go into in-depth into these challenge runs. So, but you have mainly done the Dark Souls trilogy from From Software runs. Mm-hmm. I was interested if you were already drawn to those games prior to doing anything challenge running related.
You know, my history with FromSoft games is I started playing them and I hated them. I couldn't stand it, dude. I couldn't figure out why people liked it. And it wasn't until I think I saw some streamers playing it and doing challenge runs that I realized like kind of what Dark Souls was really about, if that makes sense, like the challenge of it and all that. So I was basically, when I started streaming, I was just very inspired by those streamers that I watched, which obviously was Hob and all those guys. And I don't know, it was just that it was something that doing a challenge run was just something that I could, it was kind of endless content, I guess, that I could be doing while streaming. And it just kind of made sense to me. I was actually pretty new to Dark Souls a little bit when I first started streaming. Like I didn't have a ton of experience. I would say I was a newer player, really. I had only played it within the year that I started streaming. So it's kind of interesting, but I mean, I've really grown to actually love the games more since challenge running them.
So who was your first introduction to challenge running? Was it Hob or?
Yeah, it was the Happy Hob. I actually saw a YouTube video, which I guess that proves that making YouTube videos from streams works. I saw a YouTube video that was like Hitless Dark Souls, and I was like, I kind of hated those games, but I kind of want to see what that's all about. And then I watched it and I was like, dang, man, that's pretty crazy. So like, and then, you know, obviously he linked his Twitch, all that kind of stuff. That actually kind of got me on Twitch. And I just started watching Hob. And obviously just like, you know, let's see if I can get past Gungir, you know, without dying.
Yeah,
it was that type of thing, right? Yeah. It was just it just spiraled.
DS3 was the one you started with, is that right? What was it about DS3?
Yeah. Well, DS3 was the one I started with streaming with. I played Dark Souls 1 first. Like I did it in order because it's just kind of how my brain works. Like I want to do things in order, but DS3 was the one I started with streaming with. I don't know. I felt like that was the most, when I first started streaming, obviously I kind of wanted to think about, you know, what are people interested in, and DS3 seemed to be kind of like the more, I guess, popular one that people would watch. So I started with DS3. I did like a DS3 Deathless. It's crazy, man. It's crazy looking back at those and just like the things that I would struggle with, right?
Yeah.
And just like how I've grown and all that kind of stuff. It's insane.
Definitely when you like look back on strats that you used to do and compared to what you do now, just like, what was I doing back then? At least
I used to do Hob strats. No, nothing wrong with Hob strats. Nothing wrong with them.
It's funny actually to do with like the strats that we use, because some people do use like Hob uses like the same strats that he's always used, but he's done them for so long that he's, even though there are quotations better ways, like, mm-hmm. whatever gets the job done is the consistent way. And for Hitless, if it's Hitless, it's a good strat, isn't it? It's a strange one.
Yeah, and it's like, it's what he's comfortable with. And I get that, you know, even if something isn't exactly efficient, if you're comfortable with it, then I get, it's kind of like, you know, Hop still uses the Storm Ruler for Yorm. And like, if he's comfortable with it, like, I don't blame him for not changing to Twin Blades Yorm, even if Twin Blades Yorm feels better, in my opinion. because I made that switch at some point and I hated it, but eventually, you know, it became like the strat for me. But it's like those things, it's like, you know, if it works, then it works. And if he's comfortable with it, I mean, he's doing these, you know, Hub's doing these multi game runs. And I guess if you're doing those types of runs, you kind of need that, like, that comfort with your strats.
Mm-hmm. With like strat learning, it does like get to the point where it needs to be sort of like ingrained, because any mm-hmm. any additional thinking during a fight is a recipe for getting hits.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
We'll go into your own multiple games runs soon, but we'll keep with the any percent progression. So the next one was Dark Souls, the original, correct?
Yeah. So on my first playthrough, like not streaming, I did, you know, I did it in order, Dark Souls 1, Dark Souls 2, Dark Souls 3. But streaming, I started with DS3. I did a weird order. I started with DS3 and then I did DS1 and then I did DS2. I don't know why, but I just did it like that. But yeah, those were my first any percent. And obviously I started with all deathless and then eventually went to hitless.
Okay, interesting.
Which I think it was a good, I don't know, I don't regret it. I think it was a good thing to do, because it really, I guess, paved the way and kind of made me, because I feel like deathless is a good thing to start with, because you kind of, you're able to take a few hits, but you're still learning. The way I would do deathless is I wouldn't level up HP.
Okay.
And I wouldn't wear armor, because that way, you know, I was at least, because I knew that I wanted to do hitless, but I just wasn't ready for it yet. But yeah, went from DS3, DS1, DS2. I think DS3 was the hardest one as far as any percent goes. Now we don't talk about all bosses. That's a different story.
Yes.
Yeah,
I do want to go on to that deathless aspect. I think that's really good if someone's trying to get introduced or wants to start into hitless speedrunning, because it's like a lower back, like it's obviously still like a difficult challenge as once you go from like vanilla playthroughs into challenge running, but it's a lower barrier of entry than hitless running, where it's very, some of this, like if you go off a hitless route, some things are quite precise in the sense of if you die, then the setup mm-hmm. is gone and you might not have items, weapons or stuff like that. So it might be a quick, deathless is an easier way.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I think that you don't have to, but I just feel like if you jump straight into hitless, I feel like there's an easier burnout, because it just, personally for me, like if I started with hitless, I would have gotten so frustrated, because it's just all at once. It would just be so hard. So I feel like I said, it's kind of just, I guess deathless was just kind of a smoother transition into it, because hitless is just overwhelming. Now, if I feel like it, maybe if someone has been watching hitless streamers and really like, just like watching it in the sense of looking at what they're doing and how they're doing it, maybe it wouldn't be so bad going straight into hitless. When I was watching streams, I wasn't exactly like looking specifically at their strats and all that. So it was a little bit harder for me. But yeah, that's how I did it. You don't have to do it like that, but I don't regret it. You know, it was, and really like at the end of the day, you know, it was also a great time of building a community on Twitch for me with deathless, with not having to, you know, put every percent of my brain power into the run. I was able to kind of build the community and all that. So it was a good time.
So with deathless, you added the restrictions of not healing and without armor. So was the route similar to no hit, apart from, I guess, a couple of bosses which might require like a hitless setup?
Yeah, I think it was about the same. The only thing that was different for me is that I would not set up RTSR. Like there's no way I couldn't do that. It was interesting, because with deathless, with not leveling the HP and not putting on armor, and I was also using the blood ring.
Okay.
In DS3, that means that if I got hit, I would pretty much die from most late game bosses. So I couldn't really get hit, but it was actually the mentality of the red tearstone ring, which, you know, obviously red tearstone ring, if you just have to have your health really low for it to activate. And even though I was doing the same thing, it's just having my health low, I remember, was just so stressful for me, which was very interesting. That was pretty much the only difference, though, between my deathless run and my hitless runs. Yeah, so very inefficient, but I do feel like it you know, again, helped me prepare myself for hitless better, because I think my deathless, I think it took me about 3 to 4 months, or maybe even longer than that, and I think hitless took me like 30-40 days or something like that.
So like built up the skills in that Deathless time.
Yeah.
And I'd probably more of a chill time with it. Quotations chill with Ghosts of Dark Souls and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
If you ranked the any percents, I guess, in terms of difficulty or enjoyment, how would you put them in order?
Oh, man. It's kind of interesting because I would say, boy. It kind of depends on the day. But honestly, I would say Dark Souls 3 was the hardest, followed by Dark Souls 1, followed by Dark Souls 2. I think Dark Souls 2 was the easiest any percent. Now, Dark Souls 1 and Dark Souls 3, I fight with a lot, specifically because of ONS.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, that's pretty much, like, ONS and Four Kings, like, those are pretty much the fights that are like, are you going to get this run? Because everything else is, you know, just running sections and kill the boss at 2 hits. Yeah. So it's kind of tricky in that way. But I do feel like in Dark Souls 3, there's just more things that are difficult, I guess. And it hits harder. And yeah, so I would still say, yeah, I think DS3 is the hardest one. But for any percent, at least.
I've had that with a couple of games where there's like one split or one boss where once that's gotten through, it's like it opens the floodgates because the back half is a lot more clean. Once that boss has gone through, because leading up to it, you're always thinking about that boss, and then once you've gone past it, it's like free reign, sort of.
and that's what I've heard about. I've never played Bloodborne. I've never played it, but that's what I've heard about Bloodborne with Shadows.
Yeah, that's definite example.
Yeah.
Similar with Genny in Sekiro, even though the start of Sekiro is quite tricky with how many bosses at the start, but once you get past Genny, the back half just goes so much quicker compared to the front half.
I wish I finished my Sekiro run. I was doing one back in the day, but I don't know, I think I went and started focusing on a different run at some point because I needed to put some effort into it, and then I just forgot about it.
Current focus is the all vanilla trilogy. After that, is it going to be into the DLC, or is other games catching the interest? It's going to be Souls still for a while?
That's a good question. I've been in a situation recently where I've been trying to figure out what's next. Because before I started working on the trilogy, All Bosses Vanilla, I was like, I'm sure after this, maybe I'll go for All Bosses plus DLC trilogy. But now I'm just like, man, I'm gonna have some burnout. Like, I don't know if I can do that like right after I get this one. So yeah, I've been trying to figure that out. I've been thinking about maybe trying Hollow Knight.
I can recommend,
which I've never played. I've heard good things about it. And then what else? I've never done SL1 runs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I've never done a single SL1 run. So I feel like that's also kind of an area that I haven't really explored. Maybe wouldn't be a bad idea. And then, you know what? Maybe if I just stall long enough, I can just start on Elden Ring.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's third game. What a shame. We'll just have to reset.
Yeah.
I can't believe we got hit to the Lost Giant.
Oh no. Oh, true though. But yeah, man, it's those beginning bosses on game three runs though that really do be the hardest bosses.
We'll go into trilogy because a question I've just thought of, and it's not the thought that lost me, because that will come back another time, but different thought. What do you think makes do you find the difference between consistency in an any percent when you go into a trilogy? Because, and my thought from this is, a lot of time is spent trying to get an any percent, but then once it goes into a multi-game format, it's at least appears that there is a higher level of consistency, which might just be due to the extra time added, but do you think there's a reason?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, no, going from an any percent run to a trilogy, it really makes you realize like how much you don't know the run. Building those very consistent strats is tough, but like for me, when I first got my inner percents, I was like, oh man, great, got the inner percent. I got that game. I got it, dude. But I didn't really. Like, I mean, I did get the run, but there's so many things about the game I still didn't know. I just got lucky with. Like, you know, some people get the run just so fast because they got lucky. And then if you do a trilogy, you're going to realize that there's still so many things that you don't, you know, that can still get you because of inconsistent strats. So there's been quite a few things that like in trilogy runs that I've had to really pay attention to make sure they're as consistent as possible, whether that be cheeses, all that kind of stuff. Like I've just recently started cheesing Osiris, which I swore that I would never do. But man, that one's really tough. On my first 90%, I didn't cheese the Twin Princes. I fought them straight up legit. which I'm glad I did. But there was a certain point, I think, when I started doing either it was all bosses or it was trilogy, that I was like, you know what? I gotta press the button. I gotta press the cheese button, dude. It's about time.
How do you define a cheese?
That is such a question. That is such a question, dude. I've seen so many fights on Twitch chats about this. I don't know. I personally, it's about manipulating AI, I think, like AI behavior to where, you know, makes the bosses unable to go certain places or do certain things. I would even say, like, I mean, see, the gray area of cheese, I feel like, is like Dancer, right? Like, we're technically not cheesing her, but are we? I don't know, because we are sticking to her thigh and we are reducing the amount of moves that she can do. So is that cheese?
Sorry, just to give a bit of explanation for people, Dancer of Boyle Farley is a boss fight in DS3 where a common strat that we use, and pretty much the only strat I believe, is sticking to her right thigh, which means she only does a select number of attacks, of which is much easier to learn than the other host of things that she would do if we were at any other point other than that right side. Sorry, carry
on. Because if you're in front of her, she's going to do, you know, jumps, she's going to do stabs, she's going to do all these kind of things. But if you are behind her, she can only do certain moves. And it's, you know, it's like the question arises, like, is that cheese? Like, I really don't know. I feel like there's like levels of cheese, right? Because when you look at Twin Princes, like, obviously, like that, yeah, that's leaning on like not even allowed, which is, it is allowed. But dang, that's broken.
That's the finest of cheese.
It stinks, but it's great, yeah. You know? So yeah, I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint really sometimes, but I don't know. I think it's just taking advantage of bad AI, I suppose, you know, like, the Osiris cheese is basically getting him stuck behind a tree and a piece of rock. And he just does dash moves. So he doesn't know how to turn and walk around it.
What was the point with Osiris that went, okay, now I'm going to start cheesing him?
It wasn't, I don't feel like it was like a one and done, like, okay, that's it, I'm cheesing him. I think it's just, I feel like I have like a 60 to 70% success rate on Osiris. And like, that's pretty good. But for a trilogy run, it's, I don't feel like it's good enough. And I did lose my all bosses vanilla trilogy game 3 run to Osiris. That certainly didn't help the situation. That was a rough one. I got to game 3, got halfway through to Osiris on day 4 of doing the run. And then I got whacked by his tail. It was rough. But yeah, I don't know. It was sort of just a personal, like, I need to be as consistent as possible. You know, going back to what we were talking about, like, I need strats that are as consistent as possible if I want to, because all bosses trilogies, like, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. It is, there are 70, 80 bosses that you have to do. I don't remember exactly the number, but when there's that many, I just feel like you got to think about how to make it as consistent as possible, even if you get stinky cheeses in your chat all over the place.
Do you have an example of a strat that you changed from your any percent runs to your trilogy runs that made it more consistent that wouldn't otherwise?
You know, well, okay, it's not exactly that, but there was something, I don't remember if I did it in any percent or if I did it in trilogy, but there's the section before Gargoyles in DS1, mm-hmm, where I feel like the common strat, it's the cathedral with all the hollows. And I feel like the common strat before I try to figure something out was basically baiting out the hollows and shooting with your bow one by one, or just like chasing them around. And I just hated that. And like, it wouldn't get me hit that much, but I did not like it. So I remember I spent like 2 hours offline just going through that section. And I eventually just came up with this very precise strat where you would kill very precise enemies to where none of the hollows would aggro to you. And you'd go to very precise spots to make sure that you didn't cross over that line of which they would aggro. And ever since coming up with it, I have never had a problem, and it worked, and I've been able to use that from then on. And I would say it's my proudest achievement because I see other people using it. I'm like, oh man,
it's mine.
It's catching on.
it's interesting that aspect of like strat creation, because there's the like the base of, okay, finding a strat to make a route or make a boss consistent. And then there's, I don't like this strat and want to make a better one or make a different one.
Yes. And I feel like that's also, at least for some people, half the fun is, and that's one of the reasons that I'm super excited about Elden Ring, is just digging through and figuring out the best ways of doing things. I feel like that's just, that's half of it right there, because I don't know, it makes it the run feel like your own in a way. And that's going to be, that's going to be crazy with Elden Ring.
I mean, there's so much variety, through. Like just from the, seeing some people's network tests and trailers and, so much variety in bosses, in weapons, in exploration, in routes. Oh, yeah. Like, it's like going to be a mad...
And no hitting an open world game is going to be kind of interesting to go about that because of, I guess, the mobs and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. I didn't sign up for the network test, which was missed opportunity, honestly. Could have gotten it, you know, could have started routing. But yeah, I don't know. I wasn't super interested in playing it before it comes out, but it's gonna be interesting. I'm excited though.
Like open, I'm just imagining like a Witcher 3 level like run.
Oh man, you know that's funny. It's funny you mentioned that. Actually, it's something I think my brain blocks when I first started streaming doing the challenge running thing on Twitch. I started by trying to no hit the Witcher 3.
Oh, okay.
And I got to, was it the Griffin? Is that what it's called?
Yep.
And I couldn't get past it. Like there was, it was so long.
Yeah.
Like you had to run so much. You had to skip all the cutscenes just to get to that Griffin. And it was terrible, man.
Oh, I can't even imagine like the amount of dialogue in that game, the amount like
it's too story driven, I feel like, and narrative.
So it's a Cosmic Born, who did the Star Wars Fallen Order no damage run, which is has the unskippable cutscenes, which they found a way around by speeding up, but just something like that of not even be able to go through but still going, okay, I still fancy trying that.
Yeah And I played Fallen Order and I loved it, but yeah, I've never really thought about no hitting it or, you know, no damaging. It's one of those that I just like, I love the game, but I don't think I'm interested. I've thought about Neo before. Okay. Neo, it's that's one that I actually played Neo before I played Dark Souls. And I think it kind of beat me up enough to where I was ready, you know? But yeah, that's one that I was like, you know, maybe someday.
So we'll go to vanilla all bosses is one category, and then there is all bosses plus DLC, with which certain ones make more of a difference than others, let's say. So I think the first one you went into, even before the trilogy, I think, was DS3 All Bosses plus DLC, right?
Yes. Yeah.
How was that as an experience, and how did you approach learning that run?
That was, man, I will say, like, it was the hardest thing I'd ever done at the time, obviously, but I will say it was such a fun run. It was so fun. I think it took me the longest of anything I'd ever done at that point. I think it took me, how many, maybe like 90 days to get it, or 80 to 90 streams, I suppose I should say. It was, I love that run. That run didn't love me very much, but I had so much fun, because it's like it's the perfect blend of everything. Like it's long but not too long. It's got a lot of variety to it, and I really enjoyed that one. It took a toll on me, but I don't know. It was also, I feel like it was during that time, it was also when I think I was building my community the most as well. Dark Souls 3 does really well on Twitch. Like it does, and there was I had a lot of, you know, people introduced to me during that, and I had a lot of, you know, people in the community come around that time as well. So I think like partly why the run was so fun to me is because it was just a really good time on Twitch as well, because some of my, you know, best friends were, you know, came along during that, and it's pretty great. I like that run a lot.
Yeah, I think even till today, DS3 is the most popular one, both in general, I believe, as well as in terms of view based on Twitch compared to the other From Softwares.
Yeah, if you want to tank your view count, just play DS2.
Well, that's the thing. That's all you gotta do. That was the thing with like no one touched it, at least the ultimate, until like Hob started it, into it. Like no one touched it. I think it was like post Bloodborne That's he did it. Mm-hmm. I believe I might be wrong on my dates, but
do you mean DS3 or DS2?
DS2. Sorry.
DS2. Oh, okay, yeah. It's funny. Yeah, Hob got his God Run 2 on DS2 last game, so DS2 had like 30,000 viewers or something at one point. Yeah. DS2 is doing really well.
Yeah. It just like he's just seen the spike on that month. Just like, oh, wow. I'm finishing with the bow, of course.
Which is Oh yeah. Bow Souls 2.
It's funny, even in that moment, in like six game pressure must have been God knows what.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure, I actually didn't see Hob get it, but I am sure that Thronies was terrifying, and I'm sure every single bow shot on the Chandra was terrifying.
But the funny thing is, on the last few hits, he finished it with the bow, and even at the end of all that, he was apologizing to chat for finishing it with the bow. Because the Chandra had got him into a corner, so he couldn't approach without getting near the orbs.
Yeah.
So he was just like, okay, sorry chat, I'm going to have to finish this with the bow.
And you know, it's kind of interesting doing a multi-game run there. I do actually feel like there is a point as well where you kind of get in your zone and you actually don't get as nervous as you would be, because you're just so, I don't know, I feel like game two was some of the hardest for me, because like, okay, like this is a real run now, I'm really freaking nervous, you know. And then I feel like after the first boss fight of game three, it was good, like, all right, we can do this, like, just until the last boss fight. And then that was awful. Cinder was terrifying. But yeah, it's kind of interesting how it works like that. You kind of get into your zone, you kind of get comfortable a little bit.
I just want to follow that. We'll come back to all bosses DLC in a sec, but I just want to go into that a little bit with the trilogy runs, because being multiple game and as such potentially multiple stream runs, how did you find getting back into a run like midpoint, or as well as when you stopped a run midpoint, was there certain spots that you had in mind? Was it always at the end of a certain game, or was there at certain bosses?
Yeah, I hate stopping a run and coming back the next day or whenever I stream again, because it just, oh man, for me personally, like, people do this all the time and it's no big deal, but for me personally, it really throws me off, because at the time that I'm doing those runs, I've got that headspace in it. You know, I'm there. And then if I started back the next day, it's really hard to get back into that. So that's tough. But the thing is, like, I have to do that though, because these multi-game runs are like, you know, they could be up to 12 hours, even more. So it's just something I have to do, trying to learn to be better at it. But as far as like, yeah, the way I'll usually do it for trilogy is I'll try to get, as long as I don't have like high wall loops the first half of the stream, like I'll try to get two games, right? And then we do the third game the next day. That makes sense to me, because my streams are long enough where I can do that. And if not, it's like one game and then two games the next day.
So you like,
that's how I would do
it. So you like finishing with a fresh start on a game the next stream?
Yeah. As opposed to midpoint. I think that's the best way I can do it. Like finding that middle ground at least is starting fresh on another one. Because if I cut it like halfway through, then I'm going to be in that, like that, what I was talking about earlier, which is that kind of weird headspace that I have to get back into.
So next, All Bosses is DLC, it was original Dark Souls Remastered, was that right?
Yes.
Which is, say, shorter than the other ones, well, obviously, because DS3 has two DLCs and DS2 has all of them. So how was DS1 going into?
I feel like DS1 was way more chill. It was hard, but it wasn't terrible. I think that was the shortest, that one took me the shortest amount of time to get as far as DS3, DS2, DS1. It was still difficult, you know. Calamite makes me want to punch a wall. Calamite sucks. Obviously, you're just, you know, you gotta get past ONS and then see where that goes. But yeah, it wasn't too bad though. It was a shorter run minus the stalling, and yeah, I had fun with it though. I've really had fun with all the All Bosses plus DLC runs. I will say that it is nice to do trilogy, because you can have more variety. You know, if you get burnt out, then you can just switch to another game. I feel like it could be easy to get burnt out on like an All Bosses plus DLC run, because I don't know, at least for me, I just focus on that and that's kind of the only thing I do. But DS1 was good. DS1 was good. It was nice. Nice and short-ish.
Not compared to the next one.
That DS2 All Bosses plus DLC took something from me I'll never get back. I lost myself in that run.
Just to give a little detail, so this DS2 all bosses, I believe, is 41 bosses, and I believe this one took up to 7 hours around about, I think.
Yes, and that's actually decently fast as far as like just the normal route goes. I was able to get the run, because mainly like the whole time I was doing DS2 all bosses plus DLC, I was trying to figure out like, okay, how can I manage this run to be the most efficient and make it the shortest I can, because that will make it less, you know, debilitating for me. And I was able to get it to like where I could do it in 5.5 hours. But obviously the run, it didn't end up being that, because, you know, nerves and stalling and man, yeah, I was so nervous. And I also switched up the route like as I was doing the run that I got, because I wanted to end it with Surlon.
I was going
to
query about that, because you finished the last three splits was like traditional finisher, so Watchers, Nash, Aldia. How come Alon was post credit, so to speak, or the very last?
Yeah, because originally I didn't care that much what the final boss was. I just wanted to get the run. Like, I was just like, I just want to get this thing. I don't care if it's just Aldia last, because Aldia is, you know, it's not an epic boss fight. Like, it's just not. It's a sludge dude. It's got fire around him,
spamming fireballs.
Yeah, just. It's not epic. So I think it was more of just a personal, like, I feel like this would be better for the stream, mainly because Weed Lord Gabe in my chat really wanted me to. But I think it was a good decision, though. I think it was a really cool fight to end on. And it's like, it's not, with DS2, you can kind of just, if you want to do a boss at some point, just put them, just move them around. That's the thing with DS2 all bosses, is there's so many bosses that it's like, there's rarely just one particular route in that run. It's kind of all over the place. So yeah, I just put it at the end, and that made the run a little bit longer because DS2 credits you can't skip. So yeah, that was the DS2 run. Is there's so many brick walls in that thing, man. Mainly Ivory King was torture. And it's like 4 hours into the run, right? It's like, it's one thing for ONS to be a brick wall, right? They're 40 minutes into the run. Ivory King is 4 hours into the run. That is tough. Because basically you built everything up, you got there, and then you just get hit. And it's like, well, there you go.
See you tomorrow.
Yep. Yeah, and that's the thing about DS2 all bosses as well for the stream. It's like, I could only really do one run. Otherwise, I would have to split that up, right? Because it's just so long. So like, you could only reset as many times, you know, just so many times before you got to say, all right, I'm just going to get to this point and then we'll continue it tomorrow.
Which didn't end up happening on the actual run, I believe. I think it was one stream, wasn't it, altogether?
The actual run was just one. It was just, I just got lucky and I got it, which was the best thing I could. And I believe it was day 99 as well, stream 99. So I didn't technically cross into 100, which is cool.
I was actually interested with a lot less familiar with the DS2 run than the other ones, because DS1 and DS3 have some like notable bosses that come to mind, like in the DLC, like Demon Princes, Gale, quite a few. Yep. Well, DS3, pretty much everything. But DS1 is like ONS and others. DS2, Ivory King, what were some other tricky ones or ones that came to mind in terms of difficulty?
Oh man, there were just so many. There's So obviously I think Ivory King is kind of the hardest one. Because you have to deal with, it's not Ivory King that's so much the problem. He's hard, but he's not that hard. It's so much the
it's minions.
Yeah, the minions before. You have to, it's 1v6, right, the whole time, and you have to figure out where you can get in hits, and it's got mages that are throwing fireballs at you. It's got melee guys. It's tough. You do have some knights with you too, but well, they're kind of pathetic. But that one's the hardest, and I think that pretty much the DLC bosses are pretty nasty. Fume Knight was tough. The smelters, Blue Smelter.
Oh, the Route 2 Blue Smelter as well.
Oh man, yeah. The running sections, again, like this running section is sometimes more so the bosses, because in DS2 it's like you can throw alluring skulls, and then the enemies are like, I don't really want to right now. Like that's I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in you. I think two of my distance PBs were to Blue Smelter, which is like really late into the run too. Because the tricky thing with those guys, because there's two of them, there's Red Smelter and Blue Smelter, but Blue Smelter is basically just an intense version of Red Smelter. Thing about those guys is, you know, they have a constant AoE around their body. You can't get close to them. Otherwise, your health will tick down. And then they're just big and they're fast. And so you just have to use the bow and rotate around the arena. Hopefully they don't charge at you and you get too close and you get ticked from your health. That was a big scary one.
And they weirdly can get poisoned. Is that right? That's right, isn't it?
They can get poisoned though, which thank God, you know, because that way you can tick their health down at least a little bit. They can actually be poisoned and they can and they're weak to toxic too, so you can throw poop at them.
I don't know how that technically works with them being like
fiery metal. you can double poison them and it's great.
It's definitely not Pokemon, but like that's no. Probably
but the running sections are worse than most bosses, because like I feel like bosses in DS2, like some of them are terrible, like Ivory King and, you know, Smelter, and the gank squad can be pretty rough too. But honestly, I think more hits than not would be for running sections, specifically Elium Lois. I still don't know how to say it, man. The icy DLC.
DS2 is very much more mob heavy than the other two.
Oh yeah,
games.
Oh yeah. And we haven't even talked about the what's it called, Frigid Outskirts. Where basically you'll be running through and you can't see, and there's basically some reindeer dude chasing you down. That was pretty rough too. There's just, oh man,
is there a consistent way to do, I've not looked into the DLC route to deal them, because it's like you have to run and be every time the cloud appears or the mist appears, you get one reindeer per victim. So you just have to deal with it.
Yeah, you can get two, but it is very specific, and it did end up being pretty consistent. Basically, there are buildings in the area, whereas like if you're next to the building, the ponies won't spawn. So it's kind of about like timing your running to the buildings, and then also like when the storms are going to happen. So it's actually it makes sense, really. Like you actually know exactly when the storms are going to happen when you run through it a very certain way. So basically I would run to a building and I would have to run to another building, and I knew that halfway between my running between one building to the next building would be one storm, and I just wait, kill a pony, go to that building, wait for another storm, and so on and so forth. It'd be like that. And it's not too bad when you do it that way. You just have to, you will have to deal with the horses though that spawn, and they can be tricky, but as long as you deal with that, you should be good.
Was there any bosses, and it could one might come to mind from the other games instead, but was there any bosses that took more runs or ended up being trickier than you initially thought, or didn't even come to mind potentially when you started?
Oh man. Oof. Okay, yeah. So in DS2, a lot of the bosses that were easy actually became kind of a problem, because a lot of the DS2 bosses are ganky. You know, they have more than one that you have to kind of specifically beat. So like the skeleton lords in DS2 was tricky, because you have to make sure you timed, like you go in, you kill one, you gotta kill the other one in time before the other one comes at you. And let's not talk about Pinwheel. I mean, Pinwheel's definitely there. Pinwheel's really tricky if you mess one little thing up. So I definitely fell a few times to Pinwheel, which is, you know, the easiest boss in the game.
I was gonna say, Pinwheel, like, it's so easy that it has its own pressure, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah. There's so many little things, like whether you get the rollout when you jump down is a big deal, because it gives them time. Yeah, so that's a big, and it's like people underestimate how tricky it can be, even though it looks, you know, you kill them in two hits. Another one in DS1 is Capra Demon, because the strat, which this is going back to earlier, this is one of those things where I want to figure out a different strat for Capra Demon, because I hate it. Because basically the strat for Hitless is like going into the fog wall and you just hope he does the lunging attack, because, you know, there's two dogs in the arena. You don't want to go out and aggro those dogs. You have to stay like near the fog wall, and you just want to lure Capra. And if he doesn't do the lunging attack, then you're kind of screwed. You have to like dodge different attacks and stuff while you're like pinned to a wall. So that one most of the time is great. You just kill them in two hits. But then there's those little rare times when you don't get the right RNG and it kills you. So that's those are in DS1. DS3, obviously Deacons.
Merry go round.
Deacons, dude, Deacons will snipe you, man. But it's like, it's easy, but it's hard. It's weird. They have some insane aimbot in that fight sometimes.
Sometimes they have some weird spawns where you'll just get a fireball to the back and just like, why did you spawn there?
Oh, yeah. The little guys that will, when you kill something, they'll spawn somewhere else and they're sneaky. So you forget about them and then they'll just be like right there. Not like, cause you're focusing on the mob, right? Like and then these guys will spawn elsewhere. I've been trying to pay attention to that because I feel like that's actually super important to like remember that there are going to be dudes that spawn elsewhere because they can get you. And then, I think there's actually a lot. There's a lot of bosses who are very hidden as far as difficulty goes that you just rarely see. Those are just some examples, but there's more.
An example I've not to finish at any percent. I've left it for something else and we'll return to it at some point. But Dragon Slayer was one I really should have put more time into because I was sort of reliant on finishing him before second phase truly began. And once it did, I had difficulties.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and that's something that I'll raise my hand and I'll say that I am in that group too. Like, I just rely on not having to fight second phase because I don't know it very well. I've gotten my stats and the strats for DSA to be pretty solid to where every single time I only need to hit him once when he goes into phase two and he's dead. So that's worked out great. However, I don't like the fact that there's something that I'm not familiar with in the run that could potentially be a problem. But second phase DSA, man, is tough. There's so many things you have to pay attention to and listen to and all that. You know, I've seen people like V-Sweat and all those guys, you know, do these crazy runs where they have to be there for, you know, as long as they were in first phase.
Yeah, going back to like the SL1 runs where they might not have the necessary damage just from the upgrade in the weapon in order to finish it off.
Yep. And they have to figure out how to deal with, you know, the big meatballs and all of that, which is just crazy. And they're great at it too. But, you know, I love my twin blades.
That's actually reminded me of what the thought that I lost earlier. It was the SL1 comment because it just made me like visualize like there's the whole Dark Souls run, so like there's the all bosses, there's the all boss plus DLC and trilogy, and it's like a mirror below where there's the whole SL1 and it's it's the same thing flipped over, but just SL1. It's like so much more content still there afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just as specific too, SL1. There's strats for SL1 that are just like, I don't really know what they are. I haven't really paid attention to them, but they're just as specific as, you know, the normal runs too. You know, obviously using the broadsword, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I'm interested in it. It's kind of like I'd have to learn the run over again because there's just different like pathings, I suppose, for upgrades and stuff. And also, I would absolutely just accidentally level myself like in game on SL1. I guarantee it. it would, oh boy. I'm just so used to it. I'm so used to leveling up.
Just a little bit endurance. No one will notice.
yeah, just one point. Like, what is that going to do? Nothing.
We've talked about learning or improvements from any percent to trilogy and some consistency. Did you find a difference between learning the any percents into the extended runs, like DLC and added? Did you find a difference, or was it pretty much the same?
In Dark Souls 2, it was very different because there's just so many different places you have to go. There's different weapons that you need to get in DS2. Because DS2, I mean, shout out to DS2. DS2 is great. Like, you get, like, strength weapons in the run, and you know, you get huge hammers, you level strength, you get a different dex weapon than you would in any percent. It's actually very different. I had to kind of relearn a lot of things when doing DS2 because there are certain moments in DS2 where pancaking a boss is better because, you know, it debilitates them and you can, and they'll be staggered longer and all that kind of stuff. DS3, DS1, not really. The thing is, like, in DS3 and DS1, you will still be using the twin blades. You'll still be using the halberd. Now, I will say in DS1, you do have to think about more about your crystal halberd upgrade or reinforcements because, you know, you can't repair it. So, and it's a longer run. So I think you have to think a little bit more about that. But
that must have been tricky when trying to get a PB.
A little bit. Yeah, I guess that's save states. Save states are great. But I remember going from 80% to all bosses. I loved just the amount of stats you can get and how strong you are. I remember in DS3, all bosses plus DLC, I would pretty much one phase DSA. Like I would rarely even have to see second phase at all because I just had so much power. But that's pretty much it though. It's not crazy. I think DS2 is definitely the one that made me have to like rethink how you go about the run. And I'm still rethinking DS2 all the time. And it's huge. So many different ways to go about things.
It's funny thing about that with these challenge runs, they are routed, majority of them, very efficiently to get as strong as possible with the minimal effort. Like instead of like random mobs, we find particular souls or great souls or route to go to later sections early to level up and get that sort of stuff. So it's interesting from that perspective, stuff like Gale or Medea, how long those fights still take, even with all that. How like chunky or tanky they made those fights, even with all that.
Yeah, but I mean, Gale and Medea, so fun. So fair, felt like fair fights. And I really liked that, even though they took a while, but I think those were my favorite. I think that's why DS3 All Bosses plus DLC was my favorite, is because of just how epic they are. And I remember how passively I fought Gale, though. I remember that. I was so scared because, you know, he has a crossbow that he can pull out and he basically shoots you with his little Nerf gun. And that's so scary for a hitless run. He just immediately does it and can just tag you with it.
And then, I mean, it can be sorted by distancing, but it's teleport as well, which, although you're like immediately, it's still...
you see him disappear, you just got to run. You got to go. Yeah, but it was so fun, though. It was so fun. I got a distance PB to Gale. That's for sure. I got hit by him, and that wasn't that fun then, but it was still my favorite run, though.
Obviously staying within challenge running, but moving into the live streaming aspects, what is it about live streaming that you enjoy or keeps you with it?
Well, I feel like that drives how I even do these runs in the first place. I don't know if I could do these runs, you know, by myself. I think that the community on Twitch and streaming it and, you know, having, you know, your friends around and building relationships and all that kind of stuff just makes it fun, makes it more fun. Obviously, I like practicing offline, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, when you're resetting 15 times to high wall, it's really hard, you know, mentally to keep going from that. But when you have, you know, people in your chat who are just chatting, you guys are having conversations, it makes it so much more doable. And that's what can be kind of hard to, you know, just like start out with streaming and doing challenge runs, is a lot of the time you are just by yourself because there's no one in the chat. And I don't know, I feel like I feel very thankful that there have been people that have come along even from the start that are, you know, that are still here for me, like, and they've always kind of hung around, and it's made the streams great. And that's like you know, I love challenge running, but that's like, I feel like that's more important to me, is making sure that, you know, I have a good stream as well, and I'm, you know, supplying content and making sure I pay attention to the people in chat and all that.
What would you say makes a good stream?
I think it depends on the streamer and the community and what they expect, to be honest. That's it's kind of like the cheese question. It's very, because, you know, I've been in so many types of streams to where, like, I've been in streams where the streamer, they barely talk and they just do the run And the people in that chat, they love it. For me personally, I like to really engage with my audience. I like to read as many chats as I can. Obviously, like, it comes to a point where you have to kind of, like, you can't read everything. But that's how I like to run my stream. I want to give out entertaining content. But, like, there's also that I do want to be a good challenge runner too. There's kind of like, I feel like it's hard to kind of, it's hard to find a line because, you know, if I'm trying to be too entertaining, if I'm trying to be too funny, all that kind of stuff, and I'm just not growing as a challenge runner, I feel like that's bad for me. I want to grow as a challenge runner too. So I try to blend those things if I can. But yeah, you know, I think that if I had to give an example, dude, Dino is a great streamer. Dino is so great. You know, he has like the just a perfect mix of, you know, he's great. He's a great challenge runner. And he just about says hi to everybody in his chat.
Yeah, it's impressive how he keeps up with the scroll.
Very, very impressive. So I've always been very impressed, you know, by him. And I try to take notes from him as well.
Points you mentioned about some chats or some streamers may not engage as much. I found a funny like consistency I've seen with a couple of streamers in speedrunning that people have said, I find the speedruns like good ASMR, like as good for like background.
And that's what I mean, like that it works for them. And like there are streams where it's mostly just about what they're doing on the game and, you know, their what runs they're getting, how fast they're doing their runs, and people are just there to chill, you know, and just watch someone be really good at the game. And that's certainly a way to go about it. There's nothing wrong with it. I watch streams like that sometimes, and it is good, you know. Challenge run ASMR.
Going into events, and so you participated in a few events with the Hitless or Team Hitless and Team Widers in the communities. So Team Widers, the Deathless DS2, and also the coach class with Zoodle. Team Hitless have, at the point of recording at least, there is an event coming up in a couple of weeks, a charity DS2 Hitless event as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you enjoy participating in these events?
Yeah, I do. They make me very nervous. It can be kind of hard for me because I guess I am competitive, but there's something else about live streaming that, and you know, I want to do the best I can. I really enjoy it though. And honestly, I'm just like thankful that people think about me, right? For these types of events. Like that means the world. But I would say like I've done just a few. I haven't done a ton of them, but from the ones I've done, they've been really fun. They've been really nice. And you know, the community on Twitch, it usually understands like, hey, you know, I'm not going to be able to probably respond as much, be focused. So that's always nice as well to have a community like that that can understand that. But yeah, I would love to do more in the future as well, because you know, I feel like also like it is a good opportunity for a streamer to put themselves in events like this, because you reach more people as well that way. And yeah, it's good to make friends and stuff that way, or enemies.
Definitely, like the community, like both Hitless is growing hugely, challenge running in general I think is growing hugely, and these increasing events like Team Hitless has now started events. It's actually started for a few months now, and mm-hmm. Widers had previously done some more events, but just has the community goes from a couple of hundred to I think it's going to reach like 1,000 mark relatively soon.
Crazy. They just came out with the no hit category on Twitch
tag
too.
As well. Yeah,
the tag. Yeah,
it's reach. And we mentioned earlier about Hobbs God Run 2 with the 26,000 viewers at the end of that. Like that's 26,000 people insane. At least impressed upon the idea of no hit, which mm-hmm. who knows how that may trickle down. So it's
yeah, I mean it's crazy. When I first started doing challenge runs, I thought it was already like a very, like very, very established thing, which it was, but it has only become more established since being in it, because I'll have people in my chat like, hey, you know, I started challenge running because of you. And that's crazy to me. Like when I first started getting into it, I was like, well, this is something everyone's doing, but I'll do it as well. But no, like there's still tons of people that are just now getting into it. And it's pretty cool like that.
I had pretty much the same thought. Like when I first found out about it, I thought it was like a separate thing from speedrunning. I thought, oh, it's like people do speedrunning or they do like Hitless running. But it's like, no, it's mm-hmm. not even close, although obviously it's growing, but speedrunning.
Yeah. And I'm curious about how, you know, Elden Ring and that release is going to even drive it more. And I also wonder if FromSoft making Elden Ring kind of thinks about, because I'm sure, you know, they know that people are doing these things with their games. I wonder if they, because I don't think they thought about that when they were first making Dark Souls 1. I don't think they thought about like, oh, you know, somebody's going to go through this and no hit it.
Oh, no, they did definitely, because they very harshly put Seath in there.
yeah that kind of answers your question.
But yeah, Elden Ring, God's one. Well, Elden Ring, they've already made trickier by going, okay, so these, that's actually the hidden secret behind the scenes of Elden Ring. They made it an open world just to screw over no hit runners.
they hate us.
Well, I've previously said, like, Miyazaki, like, he doesn't live off like food and water. He lives off people screaming his name in the deads of night.
That's fantastic. Speaking of speedrunning, I feel like that's kind of something that sometimes no hit runners will mix themselves into a little bit. Yeah, you know, like hitless speedruns. I've been kind of thinking about that too. I actually really love the thought of it. I don't know. I guess like speed is kind of one of those things that's like it's a side thing to your runs, but it's like when you're resetting a ton in no hit runs, you kind of need like a little bit of something that's like, well, you know, at least we did it fast, you know, or what's the time on that? Like you kind of need like those little things to drive you a little bit, so it's not so monotonous. But I've been doing that too. And like, I've been very interested in potentially doing hitless speed runs as well. It's just it's kind of a cool thought.
Which game would you go down with?
Probably, you know, honestly, Dark Souls 1. Dark Souls 1 is kind of fun too. Like, you know, how fast can you get to ONS? Like that kind of thing. But yeah. It's just kind of potentially dipping my toes into other things. Because, you know, it's kind of what you got to do sometimes.
Yeah, there is that thought of trying to get back into a run, especially compared to when you do shorter or longer runs to do with. Like, for instance, a run I was currently doing was True Ending in Hollow Knight, which is about 2.5 hours compared to the Any Percent, which is around an hour. So like the Any Percent, it feels like even if you get hit some point into it, you can pretty much get right back into it. And within like 20, 30 minutes, you've got like a run going. But getting hit on something longer like that, it's like more of a mental effort to go and okay, start again.
Right.
And imagine similar for like the all bosses comparison to just an Any Percent.
Yeah. That makes me excited for Hollow Knight because I'll be doing that soon too. Hopefully.
It's a really good run. I'd recommend it. Yeah. It's a fun one. Very different because of...
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not the hugest fan of like side-scrolling platformers, but I've heard from pretty much everybody that like, even if you don't like that, like you're going to like Hollow Knight. So I'm like, all right, I'll give it a shot.
I would do a full playthrough, although mm-hmm. quotations full playthrough, because it is a very, very long game, but I would still recommend it, Brian.
Okay.
And you'll learn the joys of contact damage as well, compared to Dark Souls.
Oh boy. don't scare me like that. Oh boy.
Right. I would like to move into a separate topic. Could you describe what is Nukazooka?
Oh yeah. So Nukazooka was, I should say is. It's not like it's a dead. It's something that I've been working on since probably 2011 or so. It's a YouTube channel. It's what I've been doing mainly for, you know, most of my adult life. And it's basically a channel that kind of revolves around narrative, like gaming short film type things. Basically, I'm a filmmaker, you know, off stream. I like to make videos and all of that. I taught myself visual effects. So I could, you know, edit videos and make them spicy with visual effects, you know, lightsabers, muzzle flashes, all that kind of stuff. So that's been what I've been doing for a long time. It's it grew from when I started making it. It's grown to about 2 million subscribers or so. I around when COVID happened, it was harder to keep up with Nukazooka because the videos on there kind of require, you know, crews and getting together with people and filming stuff. And that's kind of what made me want to start streaming. So that was kind of like that bridge right there. And streaming, I've just been in love with streaming. So that's kind of like taking the front seat a little bit. But yeah, I still work on Nukazooka, but kind of trying to find a line between the both to where I can work on both. But yeah, it's been great. Just made, I haven't made a Dark Souls video yet. I have not. It's still something I got to do. Make an Elden Ring video.
I can't even imagine in terms of what I've seen from watching some of your videos and what you can make with like vision, like that kind of video. And if you did one whilst Elden Ring, the algorithm would absolutely love it as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the type of things I have to think about with YouTube is, you know, how it's going to do with the algorithm. That's kind of what you have to think about now, at least. Back in the day, YouTube used to be a bit different. You could make a video and put a Mario head on and make him shoot a single fireball, and people like, wow, that is the best thing I've ever seen in my life. Now they're just like, oh, okay, seen that before, move on. It's hard to grow on YouTube a little bit in that aspect.
Very saturated and it,
oh yeah,
from what I've seen over the years, like, it changes up a lot in terms of what it likes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and they will tell you if they dislike something.
But apparently not anymore
because they're removing it.
You can't see anymore, so it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. I could release whatever I want, dude. I'll just upload my VODs on there now.
I saw a tweet something. It was image of the Rewind 2018, I think. The one that was the most disliked video, and like that 3 million likes, 20 million or so dislikes, at least in the image. And now it just shows 3 million likes and the dislike button going, oh, I've just found this great video. It has 3 million likes.
As a YouTuber, I do not understand it. I just can't. I can't understand that. I don't know what they're trying to do. But, you know, I guess there will still be comments. So people will be, I guess they'll just turn their aggression into the comments, which is just great news for me.
It's funny, quite a niche, like, thing about it is, when I want to find like tutorial or guide things, the first thing I normally look at is the like to dislike, because that normally is a good reference point to the video. And that's going to be taken away. That's going to be taken away now. So that's actually quite a good thing that I just realized.
Exactly. I mean, people will probably be scammed more, you know, like, because they'll just see the likes and be like, all right, I'm sure this is a good video. I'll click their link, download their software. It's, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me, but oh well.
Quickly, what's like an aspect of being a YouTuber or content creator that people might not be aware of?
Oh man, you got to be careful, because YouTube can just delete your videos. That's been a problem with me, and specifically it's hard for me because I work a lot on my videos. Like, I work, they usually take like a month or so to make, to finish. And YouTube has gotten, you know, they've gotten very, a bit more strict, on like what they allow and what they don't allow, with all their, you know, kind of family friendly things. So there's been quite a few times where I've released videos that I've worked really hard on that they've just straight up deleted because they were like that, because they thought that like the effect looked too real or that kind of thing. Right. You know, like a guy gets ragdolled because I did in like 3D, and they're like, that looks too real, got to delete it. And that's kind of a rough, kind of tiptoeing around YouTube can be kind of rough. But there's also a lot of great things about YouTube, you know, like it's, you know, you're very, you know, you can mostly do what you want. And it's kind of hard to find your niche a little bit. And it's hard to grow with YouTube. And by grow, I mean like understand how the platform is changing, and you have to change with it. Because one of my problems is that I kind of stick to my ways a little bit. So the videos that I would make 4 years ago don't really work now. Back in the day, YouTube used to kind of be like, you know, 3 minute videos, or like the shorter the videos, the better. Now, since they have more ads and stuff, they want longer videos. And those are going to be, you know, placed higher in the algorithm and all that kind of stuff. So it's very interesting. You kind of have to just like look at what's going on and make sure you abide by that and all that kind of stuff. But it's fun though. It is really fun. It's like anything, right?
So going into that process, what would be a process of making a short film from like idea, conception, or even maybe prior, if that has bearing to it being published?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Usually it's like a what if question for me. So like, if I was to use an example, I made a video called Super Mario Underworld, which was basically a concept surrounding Super Mario and like when he falls down, you know, and he dies, right? Like, where does his body go? Like, where does he go down there? I was like, you know, what if we explored what's down that in those depths? And it's basically just, you know, hundreds of dead Marios, all that kind of stuff, and just like a kind of like an upside down of Stranger Things, like an upside down of like what's up there. And that was fantastic. That's a great example because that just worked out really well. So like I would come up with that idea, right? And usually storyboard it out, because I don't usually write scripts so much, because I'm more visual and I just want to know what shots I need and all that kind of stuff. So I'll like storyboard it out, get people together, grab my camera, go film it, very guerrilla style. And then after that, dude, I just sit myself down for 2 weeks and put the footage in and start going. Editing, 3D design, visual effects, all that kind of stuff, sound, music. I pretty much just do all that stuff. I don't usually outsource, which is, you know, something I should do, but I just don't. I don't know. I really enjoy the whole process.
Just to give a bit of visual for people, these are IRL videos. So this is people actually acting and then with effects added on top. It's not like animation. It's IRL plus extra. So it's
exactly. Yeah, it was. I take the likes of, you know, I've gotten inspired by people like, you know, Corridor Digital, people like that, who will, you know, do live action films and kind of put their video game twist on it. That's kind of what I specialize in. And it's fun, dude. It's very freeing, you know, creatively.
Corridor Digital, they're the one who made the robot that went berserk video, didn't they?
Yes. Yeah. They're great too. I went out to LA and I worked with them a little bit. They're good people. I lived out in LA for a while, so I did a couple little things with them. I was in one of their videos, The Wizard Cops, and I was basically a bad boy, and that was super fun to be on that set and able to work with them a little bit. They have a much bigger team than I do, for sure, but it was cool. It was cool to see, you know, how another YouTube team kind of works together.
Most people might know them as well from their reaction videos where they go like good versus bad CGI. I think that's how they title them. So I think they
yes,
tons because of yeah, them. So
they've been really killing it on their second channel. Honestly, I think they've uploaded more there than they do on their normal channel now, which is, I think, is a good example of kind of running with the YouTube algorithm, seeing how it's changing and how it benefits, because, you know, they do longer videos on that channel and I think it caters more to the algorithm.
Just some videos that I'd recommend. There's a ton, but just a few to mention from Susie's: Fallout v Skyrim, Mario Minecraft, Pokemon Horror Story, which I saw people in the comments were going, I need a sequel to this. I need like a Fallout.
A lot of people do that, and I just never deliver.
I mean, that's the thing of the short, like short films, but it's cool that there's that draw, and the like, obviously the super interesting videos, yeah, as well.
Absolutely. I usually like to leave the ending of my videos off like that, to where it kind of leaves people wanting a little bit more, just because I love the idea of doing a series. I just never follow through on it.
This question: if someone wanted to start or was unfamiliar but they were interested in VFX or visual effects, what like software tools or resources would you recommend them checking out?
Yeah, so my personal tools that I use, which I mean, I don't know if I would suggest someone starting with, I use the Adobe products. I use Adobe Premiere, I use Adobe After Effects. For 3D, I typically use Cinema 4D. However, I've also used Blender for 3D. Those are kind of the main ones. I usually do my audio in Premiere as well. I don't use any fancy software for that. However, if you're first starting out, you don't need that stuff necessarily. You can use, usually PCs or Macs will come with editing software you can use, you know, whether it be Windows Movie Maker or iMovie. But there's also, I believe there's something called HitFilm, which is a free editing software / visual effects software that has the likes of After Effects, I believe. I haven't used it, but I know some people who have, but it's completely free. So you can use that. And then obviously Blender is free as well. So those are kind of like the basics that you would need. Basically, you don't have to spend anything. If you have just, you know, you could use your phone camera and then upgrade down the line, right?
Was there any resources used for learning, or was it more of like trial and error across the ages, so to speak, or across?
Yeah, there was it was a little bit of both. Trial and error, but also like YouTube has everything, man. Like if you have something you want to do, there's so many videos of people showing you how to do it on YouTube. Back in the day when I first started, I actually primarily used a website called videocopilot.net, and that's basically this one guy who just made a ton of free tutorials on how to do like action movie effects. And he would release, you know, he'd put out plugins and stock footage and all that kind of stuff for it. So that was really great for a beginner, because obviously that's kind of the effects I wanted to do anyway, right? Action movie stuff. So that was, that was great. There's just tons of free resources like on the internet. You know, if you want to do a laser, if you want to do a lightsaber, just you just look, you go on YouTube and you lightsaber tutorial, and there are just so many, which is my favorite effect, by the way, to do lightsabers.
Yeah, what is it? YouTube is the second biggest search engine after.
Yep. It's insane how much just free learning you can get on there.
If you had one piece of advice for a new no-hit runner.
I would say, going back on what I said, consider deathless. You don't have to, but I do feel like that helped me transition into hitless really well. And also, going back on the Nukazooka stuff, actually, there are YouTube videos that I watched when I was first starting from Squillakilla. I believe he made some great guides on, I believe, all of the Dark Souls games. Hitless. So he basically goes through and he literally talks about it and tells you everything you need to do, what you need to upgrade. And I believe Dino does that too. I haven't seen his, but I believe Dino has some hitless guides as well. There's a lot of those on YouTube and on Twitch. So those are the main things, like, you know, the materials out there to learn. You just, next thing, you just got to make sure you have the head for it, you know, the patience, and you got to want to do it. But if you want to do it, you can.
Yeah, I can recommend Dino's Dark Souls 3 guide. I took a few things from that. I mismatch because I take some bits and pieces from a few guides, but I could definitely recommend Dino's guide. It was very well done and in-depth. If one game could be released tomorrow, either an announced, unannounced, or a sequel to a game you don't think will ever exist, what game would it be?
I don't know if this is cheating, but Bloodborne on PC.
I guess it counts.
I haven't played it, dude. I want to play it, but I play on PC, and that's pretty much it.
There's a very large mental aspect around challenge running in every aspect, whether no hit, no damage, speed running. Could you tell me about a time when a run was taking its toll and how you managed to get past it?
Yeah, it was definitely, DS2 all bosses plus DLC was, it took a big toll on me, considering, you know, I'd get really far on the runs and it's such a long run, you know, I'd get 6 hours into a run and it would just die to something stupid. That was hard. But like I mentioned earlier, having the community on Twitch really helps in times like those. Just being able to, you know, sometimes just laugh it off. And the people are just super supportive and, you know, they cheer you on for the next one.
Except for the trolls.
But they're great. So that's kind of how I deal with it. I just, you know, it's all in good fun. And for DS3, the all bosses, I did take a break from that a little bit to do Sekiro. And that was also kind of helpful. Sometimes going to something else just to kind of clear your head a little bit and then going back. So that's typically how I go about it.
I just want to add on top of that as well, in terms of community support, that can also mean outside of your own community. So in the example of Hitless, there is the Team Hitless community, which has many experts, runners in every game that they do, and many others as well with variety. That's if there's something going wrong in your own run, that you can then go to such community like that and be able to ask people who know their stuff about this and are able to more than open.
That's help. Yeah, that's a great point. That's something that goes on with that other question about, you know, first timers trying to do a hitless run. That's a great place to get some resources.
If I said most hyped or celebrated moment on stream, what would be the first one that comes to mind?
A couple. One that's more probably in the realm of your question is DS2 all bosses plus DLC, just because of how long that took me the most time of any run. And it was a pretty cool like final fight. That was probably the most hype. That or DS3 all bosses. But the other time was actually when I got partner. Basically, there's something, sometimes this can happen where the staff of Twitch will raid you.
Okay.
And basically there'll just be hundreds of staff that will come into your chat and tell you to check your email. And basically I got that partner email then. That was probably one of the, it was, we almost banned them. I thought they were bots.
I was going to say, it must have thought it was like spam or like something like that.
My mods were like, what do we do? They didn't know what to do. But it was so cool, though. Once we realized what was going on, it was so
cool. That's also super cool that it happened on stream as well.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think, yeah, because it happens to some people, and I think it might just depend on if they're streaming at the time when they're approved or something. I'm not really sure.
I imagine so. Might be an automatic thing. Well, I've seen a couple of people who, I remember being there when Aggie got to his partner as well. And it's just like, it's really nice that those moments can be sort of live captured.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. It's crazy. The chat goes crazy.
Was it an instant tick mark, or was that afterwards?
It was, I think I just had to press a button, right? I think I just had to prove it or whatever, accept the agreements and all that kind of stuff. And then it was instant. Yeah.
And final question would be, what's in the future plans of Xboozy?
Like I said, Hollow Knight, I think. It's actually going to be... I rarely do first playthroughs, but I think Hollow Knight could be fun to do a first playthrough. Maybe some SO1, and then World's First Elden Ring no-hit run, and that's it.
And if people want to check you out, where would they be looking?
Twitch.tv/McSwoozy is the Twitch. And then if you're interested in the Nukazooka stuff, it is youtube.com/Nukazooka, NukaZooka. I think that's the link. I hope it is.
I mean, this is a weird way to say it. It's like...
I think that's it.
Right.
Thank you for having me on here, man. I appreciate it.
No worries. I appreciate taking the time out for this. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I hope you have enjoyed it as well, man.
Absolutely.
And I hope everyone listening has enjoyed it as well. So I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll catch you in the next episode.
If you enjoyed that conversation and want to hear more interviews with amazing guests, be sure to head over to youtube.com/wayofloki, Loki spelled with a C, or wayofloki.com/nohitpodcast.